This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to ID Podcast.
What's going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you are having a great December as we come into December here and you're not freezing your butt off wherever you are.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Although I know there was a couple snow days this past week.
Yeah. My great uncle lives in Vermont and just sent me a picture of I think he called it a winter wonderland, but it was white and gray. And I have to say, I do not envy him, but I guess you dress for the occasion
and totally.
It's all good. But we are coming to you. I don't want to rub it in or anything, but from warm and sunny Costa Rica here. And we are happy to have you listening. We appreciate you guys listening, sharing the podcast with your friends and family. We talked about a few weeks ago, our November
subscriber drive.
Yeah.
That's what you called it.
I named it on the fly. But if all of you guys just tell one friend, family member, your spouse, your partner, have them subscribe and listen, we're going to make the world a better place, right? Everyone's going to be able to have these tools to navigate the relationships in their lives a little bit better. And today's episode is no different, where we welcome and we have a new topic that we have never discussed, and that ADHD in the relationship. So whether you yourself have it or your partner, and even if neither of those apply to you, you're going to find a lot of value in conflict resolution and communication tools that we talk about today with Melissa Orlov. And Melissa is a marriage consultant who specializes in working with couples impacted by adult ADHD. She is the author of two award-winning books, The ADHD Effect on Marriage and The Couple's Guide to Thriving with ADHD. And yeah, we dive into how to know if you have ADHD and diagnosing it, and then how to navigate that in your relationship.
Yeah, I forget what the percentage of adults that are undiagnosed.
80%.
It's 80%. Yeah. So you may be listening to this episode and not be diagnosed with adult ADHD, but maybe after listening, it might bring some awareness to some of the traits that you or your partner are portraying, and it might bring some resolution, hopefully.
Yeah, and again, there is no specific person that would benefit from listening to this podcast.
Right.
Certainly if you have ADHD or your partner does, but neither Sarah or I have been officially diagnosed. I mean, I exhibit some of the traits, but maybe I'll need to look into that more. But there was a lot of valuable things that we can apply to our relationship, and we hope that you guys find it useful as well. As always, thanks for listening and enjoy today's show.
Today's show is brought to you by our online course, Spark My Relationship. Create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner in less than 90 days. We've collaborated with 15 therapists and psychologists to bring you the strategies marriage therapists teach their clients. To unlock a special offer only for I Do Podcast listeners, visit sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. That's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Melissa, we like to start our show with having you tell us and our listeners why you enjoy helping people improve their relationships.
Well, I have a specific group that I work with, which is adults impacted by ADHD and their partners. And the reason I enjoy working with these couples so much is that this area is literally life-changing. Learning about how ADHD impacts relationships starts to give you the tools and the knowledge to turn things around. So a lot of these couples are struggling, and I get the great privilege of being able to help them repair their relationships and keep their families intact.
It's certainly a great thing to be able to do. And today's topic, as you alluded to, is one that we've never discussed on the show, and that is how ADHD can affect your marriage or relationship. And certainly the effects can be profound. So why don't we start by talking about how to determine if personally or your partner might have ADHD, because it's been shown, through your article, I found out that 80% of adult cases of ADHD go undiagnosed. So how can someone recognize the signs and then address or even know if they have it?
Well, so that's a great question. ADHD, the number one symptom of adult ADHD, unlike with kids, is distractibility. And it's not sort of minor distractibility. It is chronic distractibility where your partner or you intend to do something, but you never get around to it. Or you're in the middle of a conversation, you get distracted, you go off elsewhere. Your mind is very energetic. Even if you are just in the sort of distractible mode, your mind is still going a lot. It's very sort of disorganized. The classic symptoms include chronic procrastination, an inability to finish or start tasks, poor memory issues, and then, of course, this distractibility, as well as a lot of emotional volatility. Moving like in a fast from 0 to 60 very quickly in terms of anger or emotions is also associated with ADHD. There are a lot of other things. So it's really, if you see somebody who's really struggling and you can't figure out why they're struggling, lots of times it has to do with ADHD.
So if someone's like listening to this and they're like, yeah, I feel like I exhibit some of those things. I mean, I personally can be emotionally volatile, but I don't particularly think I have ADHD. So in the end, we need to get professionally diagnosed, right? From like a psychiatrist.
Right.
And that would be ultimately.
And people say, oh, ADHD is not real because everybody gets distracted or everybody forgets stuff or whatever. And it's an issue of how distracted and how forgetful you are and et cetera. About 5 to 8% of the adult population has ADHD. So that means most people don't have it. But if people who've felt very different all their lives or who struggled in school or sometimes didn't struggle in school, the surprising people are the people who are very, very successful in one realm, like at work or something like that, and then really struggle at home. And it's because home is so disorganized. It's so chaotic. Lots of times there's not a set structure, and that's a bad environment for people who have ADHD. So you do want to go get an evaluation. The other reason to get an evaluation is because there are a lot of other coexisting conditions that go along with ADHD. 80% of people who have ADHD will also have at least one other diagnosable mental health issue like depression or anxiety or alcohol or drug abuse. They typically have very real inhibition issues in terms of being able to stop themselves from doing something in the moment as it comes to them. They're very sort of in the now people. And so that's worth an evaluation, because it's a really good news diagnosis. And if you have it, finding out about it is great, because it opens up a lot of treatment options that will really change your life.
So the last thing on the mental illness aspect, and then I want to dive in to how we can deal with this in regards to our relationships. But is it a psychological condition, brain chemistry thing? Do they know what causes ADHD?
So it's a complicated factor, but it has to do with neurochemistry. So it has to do with low dopamine and serotonin issues. It also, there are, they look at fMRI imagery, and they see a different shape of parts of the brain that have to do with logical thinking and et cetera. So it's quite complicated, but it is physiological. It's not an issue of willpower. You can't just make yourself be less distracted. That's not the way ADHD works. It is very much a physiological thing.
I do have one more question about that. How does somebody improve or get better? Or what are the treatments for ADHD?
Well, so there are a very large number of treatments, actually, which is great. When I talk about treatment with folks, I talk about it across sort of three legs. There's a leg of physiological treatments that change the chemistry of the brain. And that includes medication, but it also includes exercise and mindfulness and some other sleep, things that change the way the brain functions physically. Then there's another leg of behavioral training. So, for example, if you're really distractible, then things that make you less distracted behaviorally, like either putting, you know, using music to calm your brain, which is a common ADHD strategy, or being in a quiet place so that things are less intrusive, or wearing headphones or something like that, or making lists. Those kinds of behavioral changes are important, and you have to do all of those different things, and you end up managing it better. Then for couples, there's a third leg, which is your interactions with other people. There are very specific kinds of tricks you can use to interact more effectively with other people, remember things better, or cue each other if something's going on that's a little bit off, or that you're distracted or something like that. So the treatment is really a management strategy. If you stop the treatment, the ADHD comes back because it's physiologically part of you. And so I shouldn't say it comes back. You always have it, but you either manage it or you don't. But the good news is the vast majority of adults who have ADHD can very effectively manage ADHD if they know they have it. That's why the diagnosis is so important.
Well, let's dive into the tricks to help our partner, or if someone listening is identifying or has been diagnosed as having ADHD. Obviously, emotional volatility, procrastination, all of these things can put a stress on the individual. It's going to be hard, you know, going through life that way. But on your partner, if they don't have ADHD and you guys are trying to have a better relationship, or certainly if both of you are exhibiting these symptoms of someone or, you know, diagnosed with ADHD. So what are some of the major things that can cause problems, and how can we address them?
Well, you know, this is, for me, this is the really exciting part. So the one of the things that's important is to properly interpret the symptoms and where they're coming from. So we have a tendency to misinterpret ADHD symptoms if we don't know they're there. I'll give you a very specific example. If your partner is chronically distracted, it means they're not probably paying a whole lot of attention to you specifically. They're distracted by everything, not just you. It could be a dog barking. It could be something on the computer, whatever. And so you start to feel, the other partner starts to feel kind of lonely or unloved, essentially. And so you interpret it, this lack of attention, as being unloved, and your partner's something wrong. And you'll go to your partner, and the partner will say, "No, of course I love you. What are you talking about?" Not realizing that there's this chronic distraction going on. And so if you know about the ADHD, Instead of saying, gee, what's wrong? Why don't you love me? You can create one of these interactions where you say, gee, you've been particularly distracted this week. Let's go out on a date. And then you end up paying more attention to each other and sort of filling up that part of your love bank, if you want to call it that. So that's a very simple but meaningful, you know, one path leads you down to anger and all sorts of problems and feeling miserable. And the other path leads you to reconnection. It's a very simple change just because you actually know what's going on. The distractibility can be addressed. So getting to know the symptoms and being able to properly interpret when something is a symptom versus an indication of difficulty or trouble is really powerful. So that's one. And another that's really a huge issue for these couples is what I call parent-child dynamics, where usually a non-ADHD partner or a more organized other ADHD partner starts to take on a lot of the responsibilities in the relationship because the ADHD partner is so disorganized. They're having trouble completing things they promise. My husband used to do this. He has ADHD. That's just how I got into this. And he would absolutely say, oh, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that. No problem. And then he would go off and he'd forget about it, or something else would grab his attention and it would sort of get put on the back burner and it would never get done. And over time, I just started to say, you know, it's easier if I just do this stuff myself. So I took on a lot more stuff. But then what ends up happening over the long run is I felt very resentful, which is classic. And I got angry that he wasn't helping out more, and he felt very diminished because he wasn't really engaged in doing anything, and I was sort of beating him up all the time. And so that becomes a horrible dynamic in the relationship. It's a very uneven status and all sorts of reasons. It's horrible. It's very unsexy. It really interferes with the connection and romance, and et cetera. And once you know about it, then you can learn how to fight back against that and make sure it's not going on and that the one partner isn't overperforming while the other is underperforming. And ADHD treatment across all those legs is the path for the ADHD partner to be able to show up more regularly in the relationship, be there more regularly, be more responsive, follow through on the things that they are supposed to follow through on and promise that they are going to. So those are two of the areas where a huge amount of progress can be made for these couples.
For your husband, was he already diagnosed with adult ADHD, or was this something that you guys found out together?
He was not, and this is the classic way that it works. Since there are so many adults who don't know they have ADHD, the typical pattern is exactly what we went through, which is a child, it's highly hereditary. So a child gets diagnosed with ADHD. If you have a child with ADHD, chances are quite good that one or both parents has ADHD as well. It's not always the case, but often. So that's what happened with us. Our daughter got diagnosed, much to our surprise, actually, in third grade. And then a few years after that, I finally said to her doctor, you know, is there any chance that my husband has this as well? And she's like, well, yeah, of course he does. And I was like, whoa, okay, so why didn't you tell me that before? So we found out about it. And actually, the reason I got into this is because there wasn't very much available at that time that was the mid-2000s, to help figure this out. So we went through this whole process of sort of learning about it. And then when we came out the other end and our relationship was much better, I said, I bet other people would benefit from this information. And I started to blog about it, and then it just sort of snowballed.
So I have a question in regards to the illness that just came to mind when we talked about distractibility. Can someone have, obviously there can be extreme and mild cases of ADHD. Is there we're talking like nature versus nurture. Is there a nurture component of like technology and phones? encouraging that distractibility? Because I'm just thinking, we just had family down last week and all the family was together, and amongst the family, some were, I don't think, have ADHD, but just constantly distracted by their phone as like a compulsion. Is that somewhere on the spectrum? Because that seems like something that would be, if adult onset, you know, ADHD is 5 to 8%, that's one thing. But I feel like the number of adults distracted by technology is going to be much higher than that. And where does that fit in? Because I think some of these solutions can apply to situations like that as well.
Yeah, so there's actually a conversation about whether or not there is adult onset ADHD in the medical community. It's sort of a hot topic. It's unclear whether there's adult. They think there probably is, but it's not yet been officially recognized as something by the psychiatric community in general. But the issue of technology is a big one. Not because it makes you have ADHD. It doesn't, as far as we know. ADHD is about the brain chemistry. But as you think about behavioral ways to deal with the world, the brain works in a way where you know it's the use it or lose it sort of thing that goes on with the brain. So if we're not using our deep thinking or our slow thinking, as Daniel Kahneman calls it, parts of our brain where we're really thinking in depth and very broadly also about something, but we're just responding to quick things that come at us, which is what the phone is, then we lose some of our capabilities in that area. So the phone and quick like video games and things like that give you squirts of dopamine. So part of the reason that some people get so addicted to these things, which they do, is that there's actually a chemical component in the brain in terms of responding to what the phone is coming at you. It's in, that dopamine hits the reward centers of the brain. So it's actually it's pretty addictive. It's hard. There's now a fair amount of conversation going on about whether or not the phone is something that, and that our internet habits are making us more lonely, and if that isn't a problem for example, teenagers, et cetera. So a lot of questions around that. But it doesn't cause ADHD. But a person who has ADHD often will have they're very into the reward and the dopamine squirts and stuff because they're low on dopamine. And so there are some issues with potential for addiction, both with electronics and also with substance abuse and things like that. I don't know if that answers your question well enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, the jury is still out, but it is. It would not be surprising at all if the technology is developing, you know, a brain chemistry that is similar to ADHD, or even if it's a certain small percentage, you know, that of maybe you're not full blown ADHD, but because of this compulsive behavior and distractibility, that it might lead to something similar. And we talk about
sorry to interrupt you. That Ned Halliwell actually wrote a book called Crazy Busy on what he calls environmentally induced ADHD. And his observation, he's a top ADHD doctor, his observation is that when the brain is overwhelmed with information or input, that it starts to develop symptoms that are similar to ADHD. They are not ADHD, and they won't ever be ADHD, but the symptoms are similar. You get less ability to think clearly. You forget things, trouble planning, things like that. So it isn't that it's developing ADHD, but it does mimic it, to your point.
It makes a lot of sense. I want to revisit when you talked about distractibility and addressing that with your partner, and we kind of skipped over it, but the importance of how you make that communication. And we talk about it on the show a lot, and it's like, it's so elementary, but it's not necessarily what you say, it's how you say it. And when we say to our partner, and I think you said like, hey, you seem like you've been distracted, what's on your mind, or, you know, rather than a blaming statement of you're so distracted lately and you're not paying attention to me. The difference in those two statements doesn't seem like a lot, but it is so important that you're addressing that in a productive way that's not in a blaming way towards your partner.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the benefits of knowing about the ADHD is that you can make it a neutral topic. So when you don't know about the ADHD, the symptoms are not at all neutral. They feel very malevolent. Actually, in the relationship, they're very painful for both partners to endure. When you do know about it and you're managing it, et cetera, then you can go to your partner and say, hey, you know, I'm seeing this pattern of increased distractibility and I miss you. I want to spend some time, you know, can we spend some time together? Can we go out on that date? And it's just a part of like, okay, yeah, absolutely. I get distracted. No problem. Let's go out on that date. That would be fun. And it isn't a criticism. I mean, the issue is, are you critiquing your partner? If you don't know about the ADHD, you're likely to say, why don't you ever pay any attention to me? What's wrong with you? That kind of thing. And that's horrible.
Yeah. We can have more empathy, you know, naturally.
Yes, absolutely. And it won't feel like it's not an attack when it's just an observation that is neutral. It's not neutral. If you feel lonely and your partner isn't paying any attention to you and doesn't understand that he or she should pay more. I mean, when I used to say to my husband, I feel really lonely, or I'm feeling as if you don't, you know, you don't really love me. What's wrong? He would just say, of course I love you. Well, what do you mean? He had no idea. So knowing about ADHD puts it into context. I feel lonely because you are naturally a distractible person. And it's just the distractibility is getting the upper hand right now. Let's go look into each other's eyes across, you know, a nice glass of wine at a restaurant and have a nice evening and refocus on each other a bit. It's just a redirection in a very positive way. So saying it the right way is critically important. And people with ADHD have grown up with people criticizing them all their lives. You get the classic comments in school, things like, if you would only try harder, you would do so well. or why did you do it that way? You get a lot of those sort of critiques all through your life when you have ADHD, because people with ADHD do things differently to compensate for their symptoms, particularly when they don't know they have them. And so they're quite sensitive, and many of them actually harbor feelings of shame about not being able to follow through the way that they had promised, or doing things the way that people expect them to do. They sort of think, what's wrong with me? And so they're quite sensitive. When you go to them and say, here's something that's wrong with you, they get very defensive. And that's part of the treatment, is learning how to both talk to a person who has ADHD in a loving way that's empathetic and really understanding it, but also learning how to be non-defensive when somebody's talking about those things with you that you love.
What would be the best way to address the situation when the partner with the adult ADHD is emotionally volatile? But first, I want to play a song I had written for Chase. I saw you saunter by and my mission was clear. I just had to meet that sexy surfer man. Then I thought you might be running with a big bad bunch when I saw your brother reeling from a soccer punch. But I'm
chasing That is such a cool song. And if I had a way to play it in my car here in Costa Rica, I would jam to it every day. Fortunately, it's an 85 Land Cruiser, so audio's not working, but I do enjoy listening to it. And it's just, it's awesome. It's such a great gift. Even though I knew Sarah was giving it to me, it's so thoughtful, and the lyrics are thoughtful and amazing. And the song sounds awesome.
And the process was super easy to make this song for Chase. I told them the story, the love story that I wanted to tell, and I picked the genre and the vocals, and Songfinch had it ready in 7 days. So it was by far probably the easiest gift and the most thoughtful gift. And they have songs starting at $99. So if you're looking for the perfect gift to give your loved one or a family member this holiday season, Songfinch is the place you need to go check out.
Yeah, it does take a few days. So don't wait until the Christmas Eve.
Do it at least 8 days.
Or the first day of Hanukkah. Or if you started on the first day of Hanukkah, it might be ready by the last day of Hanukkah.
There you go.
but don't do that, okay? Get on it now. Take advantage of this amazing, unique gift, and give the gift of a Songfinch song. And you can use the special offer that they are offering our listeners, $20 off, by visiting songfinch.com and entering the promo code I do. That's songfinch.com. And enter the promo code I do.
So the best way to, so it depends on what kind of anger is going on. So there is a type of anger called flooding. And flooding is when you're just completely emotionally out of control. That's the sort of rage that people experience where they're, you know, they're, you know, seeing red, essentially. There is the only way to address that over the long term, if that happens a lot, is actually to get in front of it, to become more mindfully aware of what your body feels like before you get into that stage, and then create some kind of a verbal cue or some sort of cue where you move apart from each other before you get into it. So that's one of those leg three treatment strategies, those interactive strategies that couples can develop to make their lives better. If you're in a situation where somebody is feeling, if there's a lot of anger or defensiveness or whatever, John Gottman has a lot of really good information about how to address those in terms of how to repair and how to de-escalate, looking somebody in the eye, using a calm tone of voice, not to engage, which is very difficult to do. If somebody is angry with you, your gut response is to be angry back, or maybe you're under so much attack that you cry or something like that. But so there are a whole series of strategies, like trying to find common ground in what you're talking about. Well, we disagree about this, but actually we both agree that we want the best for our kids, and we're just trying, you know, we have different opinions about how to get there. So those kinds of statements are very helpful. So a lot of different, I have a seminar that I teach by phone, actually, for couples, and I spend a good amount of time talking about strategies for how do you get out of angry situations, how do you repair, how do you learn more about what's going on for your partner, because both partners, they're both very different usually, and the issue then is how do you understand each other better so you can both be more empathetic.
I love the suggestion of finding common ground, because recently Sarah and I have, you know, we live out of the country. Our daughter is getting ready to start school, and there's just a lot of kind of big life decisions being made, and we sometimes don't always agree exactly on the course forward. But I think I've found, and Sarah might disagree, but she can chime in, but that when we find something like, well, we both want to do what's best for our daughter, how do we get there? We might disagree on exactly the means by which we're going to get there, but we both agree that we want what's best for her. And that can, for me, make me put my guard down a bit, and it becomes less of an argument and more of problem solving. Like, how do we get to that common ground? It's a really valuable framework that I found to be able to have a discussion with Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it gives you perspective, right? That there's a bigger thing here than whether or not you do XYZ action. But that the you know, best for your daughter is common ground. Yeah, there are a lot of different sort of decision-making tools you can use. I think the thing that surprises couples is that the research suggests that about 70% of what you disagree with or disagree about now, you will continue to disagree about 10 years from now. It has to do with how different you are, how you approach things differently. For my folks, the people who have ADHD are wired differently in their brain, and so they think quite differently. The act of how they sort through problems is quite different for most of them. And so these things don't go away. So you really are, to your point, looking for the common ground so that you can find the best negotiated solution. It's not about convincing your partner to do it your way most of the time, and that's not going to work out very well. So it's really about what's the negotiated ground and how do you give so that each person feels that overall they're heard.
It's such an important perspective to take, or just to try to gain perspective. And one thing I want to mention before we wrap up here is you talked about understanding that your partner that has been diagnosed with ADHD and using that as a tool to develop empathy. But we've talked about it in the past, but I think if we take that position, regardless, you know, if some of our listeners, a lot of our listeners out there, if we go by the percentages, anywhere between 92 and 95% don't have ADHD that are listening to this. But if you can take the perspective of that your partner is who they are through the unique set of genetics and nurturing and childhood that they've gone through, in that they're not doing it, not thinking of it as a mental illness like, you know, ADHD, but in a sense, all of our personalities and the way we act are, I'm not trying to equate it to ADHD, but there's a symptom of being a human. And just like ADHD is a certain way we go through the world, just who you are. Let's call it Chaseism, or, you know, the Chase disease for me. And if my partner can take that perspective of they are who they are, and they don't have bad intentions, they're trying to do the best, and we're going to navigate this together. It's just a broader perspective to take. I hope that makes sense, what I'm saying, but it was kind of a long way.
Yeah. You know, I try to talk to people about allowing each person's way of being in the world. I do a lot of education about different ways of being in the world, because these couples are often so different, and it's an empathy for both of them, right? And my husband has a very agile and distractible mind. He goes from thing to thing to thing to thing very quickly. And he thinks of my mind, which is quite linear, as fairly pedantic, you know, when he's thinking about it negatively. And I wouldn't disagree with him. I don't mind that. That's what I'm used to, and I like it. But we do things very, very differently. So just learning who your partner is and how they are. I think of ADHD really as just a different way of being in the world. That is, it's just a different way of interacting with the world around you. That doesn't happen to fit very well into our sort of highly linear, highly efficient world. But sometimes, and lots of times, it fits really well, like entrepreneurially, et cetera. So it's all about learning who your partner is and respecting that. And there, I teach couples how to do how to have conversations that are non-aggressive, and in their speaking, when whoever's speaking, and non-defensive in their listening, because you need to be open to your partner thinking completely differently from you about something. And instead of going, wow, that sounds weird to me, that's wrong, think of like, well, how did that person get there? And what is it about that that's kind of intriguing, you know, and ask questions and et cetera. So it's your skill. You're exactly right. That skill of being able to appreciate and adore your partner's way of being, even if it challenges you in terms of whether it lines up directly with yours, is critical.
And I really love how you just mentioned that it's so important to respect your partner, because it's so easy to want to try and change your partner or to make them react differently or talk differently. But at the end of the day, like you said, we're all just so different, and learning to respect your partner and accept them for who they are is, I think, one valuable tool that we can all bring into the relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting. I run up against this issue of you know, accepting me for who I am a lot. And I think what I challenge partners to do is bring their best selves to the relationship. When somebody has ADHD, if the ADHD is unmanaged, many times they're actually not behaving. They're a good person behaving in ways that aren't good relationship patterns, like not beating up physically, but getting really angry on little things that don't matter at all, just because they're very volatile, or saying they're going to do something and then not doing it repeatedly over and over and over. So you have to, I think, the accept your partner for who they are is a little bit tricky with the ADHD, because there is a sort of a bottom line in a relationship for it to be for you to be a good partner. If you I used to call my husband consistently inconsistent, and I said it with a smile after I got used to the concept. At first, it wasn't a smile at all. If you constantly say, yes, of course I'll do that by Tuesday, and then you don't do it for a year, which is not that uncommon in ADHD relationships, you can't have a trusting relationship. So there is a bottom line where there's a responsibility for that partner to be a good enough partner. It's not all gray. I think you have to put yourself in the position where you are your best self. You're contributing your best self to your relationship, which for people who have ADHD, that is in their way, means managing the ADHD often. But then accepting beyond that, you know, that there is, I am my best self now. I've taken responsibility for being able to follow through, being trustworthy, being loving and affectionate, attending to you, not just always being distracted. And then I think that's not only acceptance, but appreciation for all that effort.
Well, Melissa, you have given us and our listeners a lot of great things to think about. And I think that if someone out there is listening who themselves or their partner has ADHD, obviously there's a lot to apply, but even if they don't identify, if either of them don't identify as having the mental illness, then there's some valuable things that we can apply to our relationships. So why don't we finish up by having you tell our listeners where they can find you online, and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me come on to your show. I appreciate it. I can be found at www.adhdmarriage.com, and I have a lot of resources there for people who are interested in this topic, want to know more about what ADHD is all about and how to get around, and books and seminars and blog posts and a forum and all sorts of stuff. So there's also a contact form, and feel free to send me a note if you want to.
Excellent. We'll have your website on our show notes page at idupodcast.com, and our listeners know to go there to check out all the great resources and a few of the books that you mentioned today and the link to your seminar. And have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. Well, thank you. You have a great day, too.
Hi, guys. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. As always, all the links are in the show notes page, as well as on the podcast description. And while you're on our website, we encourage you guys to check out our 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. We send you an email for 14 days with simple, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And on our website, we also have a bunch of free resources for your relationship. So we encourage you to check those out. We also have our Love Tribe on Facebook. We encourage you guys to join the tribe and be there for support for each other. If you have questions or just need some relationship advice, we are all here for each other. The group has grown to almost 1,000 people, and we love it. So we hope you guys join that. You can go to Facebook, Love Tribe Fam, and you'll find us right there. And if you are interested in learning more about our flagship course, Spark My Relationship, we hope you guys check it out. We have a special offer that is only for podcast listeners. So you can go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock, and you can unlock that special offer and learn more. As always, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
The last night of the year, I saw you saunter by, and my mission was clear. I just had to meet that sexy surfer man. Then I thought you might be running with a big bad bunch when I saw your brother reeling from a soccer punch. But I'm pleased to say you're no meaner.
You were listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.